No one likes us, I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. Asia's crowded, Europe's too old, Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one, there'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia, don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. We'll build an all-American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London, boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, will just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. You wear a Japanese kimono, babe, to be Italian shoes to me. They all hate us anyhow. So let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
Ah, Randy Newman. Political Science. One of my favorite songs. I think it's an appropriate theme for what we're going to be talking about today. I'm Michael Slate, and this is the Tuesday edition of Beneath the Surface. And we have a packed show, as usual. Towards the end of the show, we'll be talking with Alan Goodman, a writer for Revolution Newspaper, on his most recent article, the RNC 2008, Pit Bulls on Parade. Very interesting article, and I think one that people should definitely check out. We'll also be talking to Bruce Wilson, who's a writer and researcher on Christian fascists and the co-founder of Talk to Action. The website's www.talktoaction2action.org. On Sarah Palin and the intersection of her religious beliefs and politics. And before we start all that, before we get into that, we're going to start off with Professor Dennis Liu. He's an author and professor of sociology at Cal Poly Pomona. And I recently came across a piece he wrote on the, I saw it on the World Can't Wait website. And it was entitled, To Those Who Put Their Faith in Progressive Democrats and Obama. And I read it and was very intrigued by it. And I thought it was something that I'd really like to talk with Dennis about. And I'd like people like you to hear it. So let's get into it. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael.
Sure. Very intrigued. You know, when I saw the title, I thought, all right, now I have to see what Dennis is saying. What were you aiming at with this? Can you explain to people what you're talking about, to those who put their faith in progressive Democrats and Obama?
Well, first on the title, progressive Democrats and Obama are not synonymous because, as most people may know, even though a lot of progressives are supporting Obama, he is not a progressive. He's at best a centrist Democrat. So I'm addressing it to both kind of categories. The story that you read is about two things. One was what the Minneapolis City Council did, in the months leading up to the Republican National Convention. And the other part of the story is regarding Obama's advocacy of military attacks in Pakistan by the United States, regardless of whether the Pakistanis want this to happen or not. So I think that both of these stories are extraordinary stories. They're very revealing, and it's kind of remarkable that there's been very little attention paid to particularly the thing about what Obama did. I was reading a piece by Andrew Sullivan of The Atlantic magazine. He put out, I guess it was on the 11th of September, congratulating Obama for putting forward this position, which he staked out back in August of 07, and about which he received a tremendous amount of criticism from fellow Democrats, including Biden, and by John McCain, and by Bush himself, all of whom who said, you know, this is incredibly aggressive, and, you know, Bush said, Obama wants to attack Pakistan. Can you believe it? And then the New York Times wrote an article a few days ago revealing that in July, Bush secretly authorized special ops forces to conduct ground military attacks inside Pakistan, which was essentially what Obama had been advocating.
You know, in, you make this argument that from the beginning that, you know, both of these stories, and you know, since we're talking about the one on Obama first, you make the argument that there is a, it really shows how, on one hand, there's very little difference between, you know, the, or there's not really any real fundamental difference between the Republicans and between Obama and even the progressive Democrats in a certain extent. And we'll get into the other side of that in a minute. But in terms of this, it is kind of revealing because, you know, it, when Andrew Sullivan did another article a while back, years ago, talking about that Obama recommending to the ruling class that they go with Obama, saying that he was actually much more suited, given the fact that there'll be very limited policy options, that the his persona would be much better able to carry out the program of the U.S. imperialists around the world, given who he is and you know, his allure around
like.
Him. Yeah, well, yeah, no, that's part,
yeah.
Well, they actually, Andrew Sullivan even said, imagine a kid in Pakistan watching Barack Hussein Obama talking about this, you know, so it's everything that's wrapped up around him, including his nationality, his, you know, what they can play off of with him. So, you know, how did you see this in relation to this Pakistan thing? Because I was really slapped in the head by when I read this. It was very heavy, actually.
Well, you know, there's been a sequence of events occurring that have been disturbing to people who've been supporting Obama when he voted, for example, after he voted for the FISA telecom bill, giving immunity to the telecom companies that have been at the behest of the Bush administration since February of 2001, spying on all of us. And after Obama said that he would support a filibuster of the bill, then he votes for it. And his really bellicose speech before AIPAC and the Israeli lobby about attacks on Iran and how he will do everything to protect Israel against Iran. And, you know, a number of these kinds of things have been disillusioning to people, but there still remain many, many people who are hoping that Obama will get into office because they hate Bush and they hate John McCain and Sarah Palin and so on. And what this incident really draws in dramatic relief around this new policy towards Pakistan, which is in violation of international law, is that the Bush White House, reactionary as it is embracing a more aggressive posture that Obama, the so-called, you know, liberal, so-called progressive, is advocating. And so not only does it show the fundamental similarities between the Democrats and the Republicans on this, but, you know, it becomes impossible to claim in this situation that Obama is somehow to the left of an administration that, you know, was reluctant to do this in the first place and has now endorsed his policy.
Well, you make a point where you say that people should actually, that Obama even says, listen to what I'm saying.
Yes.
You know, and you make a very important, and I've been actually, you know, astounded that people have sort of not really, either not been listening or just turned on their disbelief and try to make, it is something like Bob Avakian once said, that the more you try to make the Democrats be what you want them to be, the more, and that what they're not, the more that you'll become what they are, you know, the more like them. And it's sort of very heavy. When I was listening to Obama's speech, and he made that comment about, McCain, where he said, McCain says he'll follow, Osama bin Laden to the gates of hell, but he won't follow him to the cave he lives in,
right.
You know, and I will. And it's a very heavy scene when people just think about what that actually means in the world today. It's a very, very dangerous and very, very, very much a, you know, pro-imperialist U.S. empire in the world. Let's firm this stuff up and roll over the world.
Yeah, you know, Obama is very skillful and he chooses his words very carefully. And he has been very, very consistent in his positions. you know, especially with regard to foreign policy. He has said that he's not against all wars, he's just against dumb wars. He was against the Military Commissions Act, not on the grounds that torture is barbaric and stripping people's habeas corpus rights is monstrous, but because he thought it was stupid, you know, and that it wasn't the most effective tactic. So you have to wonder about somebody who says these kinds of things. But, you know, you look at who his advisors are. The big new Brzezinski is one of his advisors. Mm-hmm. We know him most famously for, under President Carter, when he was NSA chief, advocating back in the Mujahideen against the Russians in their invasion of Afghanistan, which turned into spectacular blowback in the form of, you know, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. So, yes, if people listen very carefully and pay very close attention to what Obama is saying, a lot of the illusions that surround him would fall away. But I think people are really, like you were saying, people are turning off their critical faculties and hoping and crossing their fingers that he will represent something other than what he actually has been saying and doing.
Yeah, it seems like there's this mass hysteria that overcomes people every 4 years. You know, it's like, anyway, you know, one of the things actually that you point out, and I think is just before we move into the second story, which is also very interesting, I think very worthwhile for people to listen to and check out. You also, though, in this story about Obama, you make the point that also really struck me too, is that the point that he said, and that Bush has done, Bush sent these military, he approved the plans to launch ground military attacks inside Pakistan without prior approval from the Pakistani government, and these actions are blatantly against international law. And that, in a sense, there's actually, for Obama to agree to do that is really, I mean, this is really sort of in line with everything that they've been talking about. You know, to blatantly go into a country without, whether or not they have approval, and he's actually said this, right? If we have actionable intelligence about high-value terrorist targets and President Musharraf won't act, we will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. that's a fairly heavy indictment of someone who's supposed to be this, you know, progressive whatever, you know?
Oh, it is, and I've been reading some accounts, which I excerpted on my blog just yesterday from newspapers in Pakistan about the response on the part of the Pakistani people from the government on down to these attacks on their territory. I mean, they are just in outrage, including, most notably, people who are very, you know, they hate the Al-Qaeda and Taliban. They're moderates in Pakistan. But what the United States is doing, many of them are saying, is, you know, this is the greater enemy, their attack. And they are creating Pakistan is a powder keg. And so we're beginning to see, you know, there's a couple months left before the election, the kind of, we're seeing in practice, in some ways, in Pakistan, what an Obama presidency would look like. Because despite what Andrew Sullivan said about what his name sounds, you know, his name and his face and how this would affect a Pakistani person, I mean, you know, it's one thing to have his face look the way that it does, but it's another to have your village being strafed by American bombs, you know, I mean, and being ordered by the very person whose face supposedly is supposed to make this somewhat more palatable to mm-hmm. Pakistanis.
Exactly. Now, but, you know, we're running up on the clock here, so I want to make sure, because there's actually a connection between both stories that you talked about. You know, the fact that, you know, in each case, there's this point of that there is a difference. There's not a fundamental difference in terms of the fundamental interests that are being served by either the Republicans or the Democrats, but there is somewhat of a difference in the sense that even a lot of the times the Democrats couch themselves in or cloak themselves in this progressive, you know, robe.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, I found this very, very interesting, the story that you uncovered about Minnesota, Minneapolis, and the RNC. Can you talk about that, the preparations for that, and the fact that this is one of the cities that has one of the most supposedly progressive, left-leaning city councils, governments. It's supposedly a progressive city in the country, and they were pretty, pretty, pretty bad.
Well, yeah. I mean, the basic setting is that, you know, most of the listeners probably know that at the RNC in St. Paul, that the police came down like stormtroopers and using concussion grenades, you know, preemptive arrests, even torturing at least one of the people of the RNC 8 who were arrested, of the RNC welcoming committee. So these stormtrooper tactics, it turns out, and I took this information from a story at Op-Ed News written by Michael Calvin, who was a witness to all of this. In the months leading up to the convention, the Minneapolis City Council, which is made up exclusively of progressives, including one of them is a Green Party person, okay? So they had all of these hearings. There was a committee created called the Free Speech Committee, which, as Michael points out, was totally misnamed, and it was all a fix. You know, there were all people turned up, grassroots activists turned up to hearing after hearing. They tried to do the best that they could to testify against all of this that they could see shaping up that would be repressive measures. But, you know, to make this short, because I know we're running out of time, basically, even the Green Party guy, despite making all of these grand speeches during these hearings in behalf of free speech, voted with the city council unanimously passed these provisions giving the green light to police state tactics in Minneapolis and in St. Paul. And so this has got to be a shock to people who put their faith, as I say in the title of this piece, who put their faith in progressive Democrats that they're somehow going to be somewhat something different. These people gave permission to all of these police state tactics by the police.
And it's interesting because, I mean, just to flesh that a little bit before we move on there, but the point that you make in this article is you point out how actually, I mean, it was really insane. I mean, and you know, anybody who's ever been involved in any of this knows that this kind of thing happens. Mm-hmm. You know, they even were canceling. They hid the last meeting.
Yes.
You know, which was sort of like, this is their free speech meeting. This is their free speech committee. And they hide the time and place of the meeting so they can make the decision to approve what the police were going to do.
Yep.
You know, it's just incredible. And you make the point. You say, what is the world coming to? The labels certainly don't tell you the story. You have to look carefully and critically at what people are actually saying and what they're doing. So, you know, can you expand on that? We'll kind of wrap up with this, about what you see in opposition to this faith in the progressive Democrats and Obama.
Well, I think essentially the solution here, or the path forward for the people, those who hate all of this stuff and recognize what's going on here, because, you know, in another piece that I wrote recently, I entitled Shock and Awe Comes Home to Roost. And I was referring to what happened in the streets in St. Paul at the RNC, that, you know, these kinds of atrocities being committed abroad are being brought home now. And this is an extremely alarming development, but it was, you know, clear that this was going to happen. And so essentially the shaping up of a kind of a police state atmosphere in our country, the only way to take this on is for the people to act independently of the acceptable political channels, to speak out, to protest, to show how people feel and call on others to do the same. It's going to take a mass movement that is independent of the electoral process and that creates an atmosphere in this country, like we saw in the 1960s where, you know, and then in the 1930s where government and public officials and the media had to do certain things that they didn't want to do because the pressure coming from the grassroots was so powerful. And that really is what we have to do. It's not only the only realistic path, it's the only moral stance people can take in this situation. Because to participate in the processes that are being given to us as what's acceptable, that democracy equals voting for one or two of the Tweedledum and Tweedledee, is even if people do end up voting, you know, I'm not taking a stand and saying people should not vote, but realize that that is not where policy is made. Where policy is made is in the streets.
And, you know, and I do think it's actually worth, I mean, as you say in this thing, I do think, and I'll just read what you said, where you say this, just for emphasis here, this where you say it's the only realistic path, it is the only moral stance possible. Participating in the existing structures and channels is a fool's errand, and worse, it amounts to collusion and crimes against humanity, which to me is really exactly the point. You know, it's not that you're drawing a line and saying that people, you know, you'll never work with people to vote, but people do have to recognize that there is an amount of complicity. If you know, there is complicity, and that can't be tolerated these days.
Yeah, and can I just end with the last couple of sentences in my piece?
Sure.
Stand up for those who have stood up, such as the RNC8. Wear orange daily and spread the resistance. Don't kick yourself after the November 2008 election and say, why the hell didn't I recognize the signs? Why did I allow myself to be sucked in once again? Why didn't I fight the burgeoning police state when we still had a chance?
Dennis, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Talk to you again soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
I'm Michael Slate, and I've been talking with Professor Dennis Liu, whose latest piece, To Those Who Put Their Faith in Progressive Democrats and Obama, can be found on the World Can't Wait website, which is worldcantwait.net. And it's also, Dennis is also on the National Steering Committee of the World Can't Wait. And so, you should check out his work. He's got quite a few pieces posted up on the World Can't Wait website, and they're always very provocative and very thoughtful. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Bruce Wilson about Sarah Palin and her religious beliefs.
Next Tuesday, September 16th, Beautiful Struggle will broadcast live from Lucy Florence Coffee House in Leimert Park, and we want you to join us. We'll host a panel discussion about the November election with community activists and thinkers, with a focus on issues affecting African Americans, people of color, and low-income folks.
Does Barack Obama's historic candidacy offer the hope of a more just society? Can the change we need be obtained through the ballot?
So listen on KPFK, or better yet, come by and be a part of our live studio audience at Lucy Florence Coffee House on Tuesday, September the 16th at 3351 West 43rd Street in Los Angeles from 7 to 9 p.m. And as usual, let's talk about it and be about it.
First time I have read the Bible, it had struck me as unwitty. I think it may start a rumor that the Lord ain't got no humor. Put me inside as a seat. Bless this super string theory. Oi, 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 accelerate the protons. I steer it twice and then just at me. Cause I don't read the Bible.
Oop, just got to recover a little bit. Even I dance to Gogo Bordello. For those of you who know me, that's a rarity, okay? That's Gogo Bordello and Super Theory of Super Everything. And if you stay tuned, we're going to have a nice little surprise for people at the end of the show. So stay tuned and you'll get your surprise. Gogo Bordello, just a tremendous band. You want to have a really good time. They're going to be coming to town very soon. Not to be missed, okay? Well, joining us now to talk about Sarah Palin and her religion and her religious beliefs and the intersection with her political program is Bruce Wilson. He's a writer and researcher on Christian fascists, the co-founder of Talk to Action, and his website is www.talk2action.org. That's talktoaction.org. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, you came highly recommended. Joan Bocaire from the Theocracy Watch, as soon as I asked her, she said, Bruce Wilson's the man to talk to on this. And she also mentioned that she was terrified, which I think anybody who actually pays attention to what these, frankly, what I think are Christian fascists, and I think, you know, they're Christian and they're fascists, and that's why they're called that. And, but if you pay attention to this, they're not, it's not like they're just sort of this sort of side stream religious wackos that are out there. They're actually, they represent something very serious in the world today. And so I wanted to have you on to talk about, to give people an understanding of, you know, Sarah Palin is not quirky. She's a Nazi, you know, and I wanted to, what her religion has to do with that. Can you explain a little bit about the religious denomination she belongs to?
Sure. Well, Sarah Palin's churches, the key thing to understand is that her key churches, especially the Wasilla Assembly of God, these churches aren't in a religious movement it's independent from any Christian denomination, and it falls under the umbrella of something called the New Apostolic Reformation or the Third Wave. And it's a new movement within the last decade or so, really, that's not synonymous with the Assemblies of God or Pentecostalism. It's a whole new thing. It's a whole new emerging sort of mega church of its own. It to call even a church is a misnomer. It defies definition or labeling, but it's a new religious movement within Christianity that's not synonymous with any existing denomination. So,
what is this? What is this? Yeah. Go ahead. You can go ahead and continue.
Well, okay. It's that this new apostolic reformation movement, it rejects separation of church and state vehemently, once another one believes that the church and state should be one, and it tells believers that they have a God-given mandate to take control of the world and expel evil. That's the beginning to begin with. So where were you going with that question?
Well, I was curious because, you know, this is an end times, an apocalyptic denomination, though, right? It's an end times, sort of end times is, and the apocalypse is a big theme of what they're about.
Yeah, it is. So for that reason, it's an this seems paradoxical, but even within the context of an apocalyptic theology, this new apostolic reformation or third wave movement is highly, highly focused on youth, on young people, teenagers, and is trying to raise what it sees as the last generation to form something called Joel's Army, which is an end times army which will be given supernatural powers, major powers, raising from the dead, teleportation, which will cleanse the world of evil. So it's very, the rhetoric is quite extreme, and you can take evil as being parts of humanity or geographic areas. It can be more or less specific, but the cleansing of the world of evil is something that's going to be done by human beings. That's the point.
Well, with the Wasilla Assembly of God, in one of your articles, you write that the pastor there, Ed Kalmins,
yes,
and his sermons espouse such theological concepts as the possession of geographic territories by demonic spirits and the intergenerational transmission of family curses. And you can see how that would really, you can see the ideological unity between that and what the U.S. imperialists are trying to do around the world these days.
Sure. And, in terms of the idea that whole geographic areas can be possessed by, quote-unquote, demon powers, this movement uses what it calls strategic-level spiritual warfare. That's the term they use. They map out these geographic areas that are supposed to be controlled by demon powers. And this is done by an actual organizational entity called the World Prayer Center, which used to collaborate very heavily and probably still does with Ted Haggard's church before he fell from grace. It's in Colorado Springs. And so they're working on this global project to map out these areas of heaviest demon infestation and drive them out from whole geographic areas.
Any idea if any of those areas include the place where I live?
Well, they tend to line up with the typical areas that the American right tends to vilify. You know, New York, L.A., San Francisco, typical liberal cities. And one of the interesting things is that Sarah Palin has, in a June 8th appearance at the Wasilla Assemblies of God, she talked about having been prayed over, or, if you will, you can see this as having been anointed, quote unquote, by a leader in this spiritual warfare project, a Kenyan minister named Thomas Muthee, who made his reputation by supposedly driving out a spirit of witchcraft from a Nairobi suburb, after which crime in the suburb supposedly plummeted. And that was the legend, but I've looked, and the crime rate doesn't seem to have actually fallen at all. But so if you think in this way, you don't really need government programs. If you can fix society by driving out demons, why do anything with the government? Well, why not just restrict it to defense and police? So there are policy implications.
Well, it's very interesting because, I mean, you even make a point where you talk about that they don't even see this as these healings and whatnot, and all the stuff that they have going on as being divine intervention by God, as much as the result of supernatural gifts imparted to humans who've been anointed to participate as participants in ridding the world of evil, which to me is like, again, this becomes, then you look at the separation, firm opposition to separation of church and state, and the whole idea of that they are on a crusade to actually recapture the world for, God.
Yeah, well, and even more than being on a crusade, this is a movement which tells people that they can become divine or semi-divine or like Jesus Christ as Jesus Christ was supposed to be, having special powers, Christ-like powers, by doing specific practices and specific sorts of prayer and worship. So certain humans can sort of elevate them spiritually above the rest of us and have superpowers. And by extension, you can see how this would work into people's psychology. They would think that they were special and they could be above the normal morality. It just flows in that direction.
Well, you look at this and this idea, this sort of welding, this wedding together of religion and politics. I mean, you had amazing, what I thought was just amazing, and I will be talking with my next guest about this a little bit too, but the idea, what happened at Saddleback, where you actually have this guy who, frankly, is a fundamentalist preacher and who's really, general, as much as they try to present him as this sort of, mild-mannered, whatever, the guy's really whacked out when you look at his positions. And everything that you've written about in terms of Sarah Palin's church, her religious beliefs, seem to harken up, that kind of fundamentalism, but also even more in the sense of, like the Left Behind series is something that I was reminded of as I was reading your pieces and what she believes in. And I'm kind of, it's very heavy. What is it that, how strong is this and what connection do they have with other religious forces in the country?
Well, let me put it this way. This is an incredibly quickly moving religious movement that is really come into existence within the last decade or half, or not much more. That is, I mean, it represents what happened was that a number of emerging religious tendencies that were similar are getting pulled together by some gifted or leaders who are gifted as far as being organizational geniuses. So they're fusing all these tendencies together into one new, more or less unified movement, and that's happening very, very fast. But at the same time, I'd note that the interesting thing is that this movement is considered a heresy by many conservative Christians, because it's so far out theologically. And so, the work that my team and I have been doing, it is actually, it's getting, our stories are getting literally copied and pasted and reposted on the websites of Christian conservatives who are just themselves aghast, and it's, fights are breaking out because this is a really controversial view that humans can become as gods. That's the strong one idea that is in the mix and so on. So it's not an idea that's completely palatable to all conservative Christians.
Now, there is actually, it's interesting too, though, because you talk about how they're forming, they believe they're forming a post-denominational church to take the world for the end times. And, you think about that in relation to what they actually, what they're preaching, who they're bringing forward. I mean, this thing of them being tied in or related to in one way or another with the film. People saw the movement that was portrayed in the film Jesus Camp and these people being tied into that. How much also connection is there between, and I'm asking this because, there's a lot of people who look at this. They look at what's been going on with this, with Sarah Palin, and they can look at the quirkiness, the silliness, the whatever, the ridiculous things that they read about it or they see about it and just be dismissive. But actually you had a long time ago James Watt, then you have John Ashcroft, and then you have, Esther Kaplan's book showing how much of the government, has actually been infiltrated by these very, Christian fundamentalist forces, these Christian fascist forces. And how do you view that in terms of the insanity that seems to be concentrated in their ritual and their beliefs versus the political danger of their program?
Well, oh boy, that's an awful lot of questions at once. I'd have to say that if you look at the continuity of the involvement of Christian right and Christian conservatives in politics, I mean, this goes back a long way. I become friends with a guy who used to work with John McCain's father and who was involved in, so my friend tells me, actually fighting the Christian right of the day. So McCain's come a long way, but anyway, you can see a slow slide towards, away from what we consider rationality. In other words, back in the 60s, most Americans tended to believe in science. I mean, there was a reason. We were trying to draw even with the Soviet Union was perceived to be ahead of the U.S. in terms of science education and so on. And now, where are we? Well, we're facing the possibility that a vice presidential pick not only doesn't believe in evolution and not only is reported to believe the Earth was created more or less 6,000 years ago, but also as someone who believes that crime can be fought by driving out demons from whole geographic territories and from people. And this has some awful effects, say, in Africa, where these ideas have led to literally parents murdering their children because they don't have the money to pay local clerics to drive out the demons that they're told infest their children. And this really is the flight from the idea that we can use our minds, our intellect, to make sense out of the world. And you can see this. Matt Taibbi of the Rolling Stone did a very funny piece that puts this in a humorous light. But when, say, followers of John Hagee are told they should vomit up the spirit of intellect, the demon of intellect, what does that mean? I'll throw that question back at you.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, we're going to have to get a move on. See, that's the. But Bruce, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
And your website is?
It's www.talktoaction.org.
Okay, Bruce, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Take care now. I'm Michael Slate, and this is Beneath the Surface, and it's 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. It's KPFK, and we've been talking with Bruce Wilson, who's a writer and researcher on Christian fascists. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Alan Goodman, a writer for Revolution Newspaper, to talk about his recent article in Revolution called Pit Bulls on Parade.
Hey, KPFK faithful. It's fun drive time again at KPFK. During October, we'll be having our fall fun drive to support your progressive radio station. We'll need your financial and volunteer support, as always. Fun drive is a 24/7 event and a really fun way to begin to volunteer at KPFK. Currently, we're especially in need of a food coordinator, a most important and immediate position. We'll also need drivers willing to support the food coordinator, as well as phone room volunteers to take listener pledges. Don't think that your volunteer contribution won't be needed. There's always room for more. To volunteer, call us at 818-985-2711, extension 513. Better still, email us at volunteer@kpfk.org.
Я письмо достал, Николай Иванович.
И опять запрещенное.
Совершенно запрещенное. Белинского Гоголю.
Ах, Николай Иванович, какое письмо.
Drop the charges! Это запрещенное, давай!
Welcome back. A little bit more from Gogo Bordello. That's Not a Crime. Very interesting song. Very interesting group. Before we join our next guest, Alan Goodman, I want to let people know that there are, I want to make a couple of real quick announcements. People remember I had P.Z. Myers on my show a couple months back, and he's going to be speaking at Libros Revolucion on the 26th of September. That's Friday the 26th at 7:30 p.m. Should be a very interesting talk down there at Libros Revolucion. I'll announce that again next week. Ricky Lee Jones is also appearing on the 25th of September at the Cerritos Performing Arts Center on the 25th at 8 p.m. And this Sunday at 2 p.m., there's going to be a discussion down at Libros of the Communist Manifesto for Our Time. It's a manifesto called Communism, the Beginning of a New Stage. It's a manifesto from the Revolutionary Communist Party USA, available in Revolution Newspaper, the current issue of Revolution Newspaper, as well as on the website for Revolution Newspaper. Now, joining us now to talk about his article, Pit Bulls on Parade, is Alan Goodman. And, Alan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. So you start off this thing, you know, you start off your article with if you thought that any of this, that there was the euphoria of the Democratic Convention, all this stuff went on, that the political pendulum in the U.S. was swinging to the left, if you thought the Bush regime was so widely and bitterly hated that a repackaged version couldn't seriously contend for the presidency, and if you thought that the Christian fundamentalist theocrats were passé, you got slapped upside the head. Can you tell us what you're talking about there?
Well, you know, that was a week ago, and I think at this point everyone has kind of felt the slap. You know, it looked going in, if you can remember way back then, it looked going into the Republican National Convention like it might just be a fiasco. There was, you know, a hurricane threatening to remind everybody of the, you know, horrific outrage of the way the Bush regime handled Katrina. There was, you know, the whole awkward situation of an unpopular president. There was you know, just a lot. The Christian fundamentalists were unhappy, and it, you know, it looked like the whole thing might be kind of a dud. And then, boom, literally, you know, the Republicans came out, first of all, and most kind of dynamically with the selection of Sarah Palin, which your previous guests have been talking about. And then just a whole barrage, which I think can probably be summed up in, and I quoted this in my article, in a statement from a Republican congresswoman who pretty much summed up the message of the convention when she told the crowd, quote, "We are gun-toting, God-fearing, flag-waving Americans who are excited to see two crack shots on the ticket with the status quo in their sights." And so there was a whole kind of populist reactionary, you know, let's go after the elites message. And overall, just a very virulent, resurgence of Bushism, albeit without Bush himself being there physically, and with a few, you know, with the addition of, as I analyze in my article, a little bit of populism. But essentially, you know, a virulent Bushism is back. And part of the reason I started the article like I did is I had just been, you know, in the midst of a number of arguments with friends of mine who were sort of, you know, on this whole kind of, oh, wow, you know, Bush is going to be gone on, what's that, the bumper stickers is popular out there. Everybody has the date that Bush will be out of office on their bumper sticker. And
well, they even have, they had that.
Not so fast, Bush.
Right. They even have that clock that's ticking the time down until Bush is gone and we have a whole new world, which is, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is that, you know, this thing with Sarah Palin being, and a lot of people have talked about it, but, you know, one of the things that really sort of stuck in my brain and was like, you know, just twisted in there was this idea that people are so quick to just concentrate on the you know, really the most bizarre stuff about Sarah Palin in terms of her religious beliefs. And if you go on and see the you know, the that my previous guest had that thing on YouTube, the video on YouTube, which actually interestingly enough was you know, censored by YouTube to a certain degree, where they actually took it away from them and made it so they couldn't add or update information on it. Didn't have a chance to talk to them about that. But there was this whole thing of people looking at sort of some of the most ridiculous features of the religious worship, but ignoring actually what this means in terms of the political program that's out there.
Well, you know, that may be true on the one hand. On the other hand, I feel, you know, both the mainstream media and the whole process of selecting are actually, I mean, what you're talking about may be the case among, you know, the sort of alternative media and stuff, but in general, I feel that, you know, her nutcase Christian fundamentalist views that your previous guest was talking about are really being whitewashed in the media. I mean, it's really incredible. Here's someone who thinks that global warming is an act of God, who opposes abortion, even in the case of rape and incest, and as your previous guest elaborated, part of a very theocratic movement, people who believe they've been ordained by God to impose these beliefs on society, you know, and also, as your previous guest documented, she's a certified nutcase, you know, the stuff about all the stuff that he documented.
Right.
And here's someone who has been brought forward now through, you know, the process, and we should talk a little about what this tells us about that process, who's been brought forward as a credible candidate for vice president. You know, she's the running mate of a very old candidate. She's going to be a heartbeat away from the presidency with these kinds of, you know, these kinds of beliefs. And where have you seen in the mainstream media, you know, they're focusing on things like, well, is she really qualified? Well, of course, you know, she doesn't have any experience. That's obvious, you know, at this level. But, you know, to me, the fact that someone with these kind of extreme religious theocratic beliefs has been elevated, you know, to the vice presidency, and, you know, hope we can talk about this for a minute, too, but, you know, the whole process through which that was orchestrated is really stunning and should really be an alarm clock to people about what is going on in this country.
Yeah, I do want to get into that because actually I did misspeak earlier because what I was thinking about more was the point about the, you know, the people can some people, you know, and it has been the alternative media talking about some of the wackier features of her religion, but also talking about this thing of she's not experienced, she's only been the mayor, she's only been the commander of the National Guard. But there's actually a connection between this theocracy and the Christian fascists and the Republican program and what the Imperials are setting out, what that section of the Imperials are setting out to do. And what, you know, why don't we talk about that process? Because this is not what McCain seemed to have in mind. There was a lot of talk about him wanting Lieberman or wanting Tom Ridge, and he ends up with the anointed of God, you know?
Well, he did want Lieberman or Tom Ridge. You know, this is, I mean, all the mainstream media has documented this, and I quote them in my article, The Times. The Washington Post revealed that he and his people didn't vet Sarah Palin until the day before he announced publicly that she would be his running mate. So, you know, what does this tell you in this day and age where everybody is, you know, has every detail in their closet gone through before they do anything? And here's someone brought forward to be vice president. And I've read critiques on some of the alternative blogs and so on that this represents that, you know, that just McCain didn't do a careful job vetting or something.
Mm-hmm.
But let me ask you and people who feel that way this, you know, what if, for example, Ron Paul, who, you know, I'm not an admirer of his, but, you know, he has a certain section of support in the Republican Party. What if he called up McCain and said, you know, I can't go for either of your vice presidential picks. I picked an unknown, somebody who you met once and know nothing about, but is fully in line with my ideology, and she's going to be your vice president. Well, you know, McCain probably wouldn't have taken the call, but the point is he did feel compelled to take this call. He felt compelled to take the call. He put her on the ballot, again, hardly knowing her, and you know, she wasn't his choice. And the mainstream media, you know, as we were just discussing, sort of, you know, hockey mom and all this without really going into the fact that, and I use the words advisedly, and I think your previous guest and your show so far has made a case for this, you know, a fascist nutcase, a heartbeat away from being the person who's got her finger on the nuclear trigger. And how was it decided that she's a credible candidate for president, that the media would treat her with the kind of kid gloves they have, whereas on the other hand, you know, people who say Dennis Kucinich or Ralph Nader or Cynthia McKinney, who are still within, you know, from my perspective, limited by, you know, and have real limitations in terms of, you know, their agendas being within the system, but they, you know, they're deemed, you know, fringe candidates by the mainstream media, not credible candidates, and yet, and I'll say it again, here's a fascist nutcase who has been deemed, you know, a perfectly credible candidate. So,
and well, let's talk about this in terms of this process. I mean, it was interesting to me, one of the things you point out in the article is actually, yeah, it wasn't Ron Paul to call up and did this. It was actually James Dobson who was, you know, I mean, all along had been a sort of a thorn in McCain's side in terms of where are the Christian fascists? Where is that social base going to be in relation to this election? And he had been saying, what, that he wasn't going to vote for McCain up until the RNC.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly heavy when you think about that. This is a cat who does call and then says, you know, or whatever forces aligned with that call. Tell me this, man, what does Sarah Palin bring to McCain and the ruling class in relation to that?
Well, I think that is the question. You know, both what does she bring and what does the fact that she was inserted into onto the ballot represent about the, you know, the state of the political terrain today? And you know, why do these, you know, yes, you know, they're a voting bloc and all that stuff, but fundamentally, the Christian fundamentalists, theocrats, the Christian fascists, represent for sections of the ruling class in this country the answer to how to keep this country together in the face of very profound centrifugal forces in U.S. society today, economic, social, philosophical, I mean, you know, this, the whole kind of cohering norm, the white supremacy, the male supremacy, all these things are under a lot of stress and strain, and as well as the, you know, the economic situation that kept a lot of people pacified. And in the face of that, both widely among the general public and in particular in the military, there's been the promotion, you know, by very powerful forces in the ruling class in this country straight up to the Oval Office of these Christian fascists. I want to recommend one article, because we can only go into this very briefly here, but there's an article called Elections, Resistance, and Revolution, The Pyramid of Power and the Struggle to Turn This Whole Thing Upside Down by Bob Avakian, which is available at revcom.us, which goes into the whole role that the Christian fascists are playing and why they have been brought forward. And so I would recommend that. I don't know how much we can get into that now, but the short answer is these people are very central to the way society is being run. And, you know, the things that your previous guest was saying about Palin believing that these beliefs should be imposed on society. Well, on the one hand, you can say she's a nutcase, but then on the other hand, you have to ask, why was she elevated in this way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
and
true.
By whom?
Right,
for
exactly.
What?
Exactly, exactly. Now, we do only have about 2.5 minutes left, so I wanted to ask you this, because one of the things that comes up when people do see this, you know, what's going on with Sarah Palin, they get a sense of who she is and what's going on with McCain and sort of what that coheres together in that, you know, in the McCain, you know, option out there, then a lot of people are looking at it saying there's no way in the world you can sit this election out, or you can, you know, just like not immediately start like working for Obama or hoping that Obama will get in or going for whatever is possible. Can you talk about that?
Well, let's look at how have Obama and Biden responded to this. You know, what has Obama said or Biden anywhere along the terms of, you know, they've raised some questions about her, you know, lack of experience and all this, but where have they called her out as a fascist nutcase? And beyond that, here's some provocative questions for people who make that argument. Just based on trying to get elected, one would think that Obama and Biden would be going nuts with the Palin thing. She is against abortion, even in the case of rape and incest. Why wouldn't they be going wild with that one? You know, there's YouTube videos of her saying that the war in Iraq is God's plan, and even this gas pipeline of hers. Where has Obama called that out? Here's what people have to think about. Obama would rather lose this election than mobilize the base of the Democratic Party around these fundamental issues like the war, abortion, sex education, birth control. And what does that tell you about how this whole process is working? I know we have a few seconds here, so I'll just sum it up this way. The problem with the Obama campaign is not that it's spineless or that it's not really sufficient to accomplish a progressive social change. The problem is that it's sucking all the outrage and anger in society into a quicksand here, and in the process facilitating and greasing the skids for the whole, you know, Bush without Bush agenda. And I think what Dennis Liu, if I remember right, was arguing for earlier is
Ten
so
seconds,
important.
Alan. Ten, yeah, exactly. Alan, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and Alan Goodman's article can be accessed at revcom.us. It's in Revolution Newspaper, this week's issue. And I want to